I call the House Labor and Commerce Committee to order at 9:01 a.m. on Friday, May 6th. First up, we're going to take up the quick one, Senate Bill 190, Regulatory Commission and Refuse Utilities. So we rescinded action on Amendment Number 1 on Wednesday. Therefore, I'm going to move Amendment Number 1 once we address this amendment, then we can take action on the bill. And so I move Amendment Number 1. Is there objection?
Object.
Representative Nelson objects. Would you like further discussion on it, Representative Nelson?
Brief eddies.
Back on the record, and Senator Myers, LA Legal, sent a memo saying they don't see legal problems with it, so we have disagreement between the executive and legislative branch. I talked to Chairman Pickett about it. So anyway, further discussion on the amendment?
Yeah, so part of the legal issue that got sent out to you was saying discuss it with the RCA. So have you talked to the RCA?
Yes, I talked to Chairman Pickett, and you know, I think there's just a disagreement between basically the Department of Law lawyers about whether the RCA should be required to do the legwork of looking at a potential privatization impact on consumers.
Do we have the RCA on the phone?
Yes. Chairman Pickett, do you want to address our conversation the other day?
Chair Fields, can you hear me okay?
There's a little bit of an echo, but let's just go ahead and see if it is.
I'm going to turn it over to Stuart Gehring because he needs to outline the high-level points with concern about lack of definition, privatization in particular.
Sounds good. Go ahead, Mr. Gehring. Mr. Gehring, do you want to reiterate the concerns you noted in your memo?
Yes, I would like to at least outline them quickly. And I think the first thing I would like to say, Chair Fields, is that the information that I sent you does not address any policy matters or whether or not the underlying concept of your amendment is a good idea or a bad idea. So my concern that I expressed and that the Department of Law has expressed is that the amendment as it's currently written has a number of ambiguities in it. And ambiguities create issues with both implementation and enforcement. And as a result, we certainly could work with you to identify exactly the problem that you're trying to resolve. But the primary issue centers around what does privatized mean. Under current law, if privatization means that the municipality is actually selling a certificated refuse utility to a private entity, existing law already requires that that transaction be approved in advance by the RCA as a certificate transfer. It's not clear whether this would add a great deal to that existing process. And if privatized refers to a municipality choosing to use contractors to perform some of its utility functions, that's really an internal management matter. And for a utility, and as I think I mentioned when I addressed the committee the last time, as it stands right now, there are no municipal refuse utilities which are economically regulated, and as a result, they are exempt from any RCA oversight over their internal management. And so, as a result, there's no there would be no ability for the RCA to basically say anything about that. They're under current law and under the amount of information that's currently available to the RCA, that would be something completely new. So it really needs to be clear what privatized means, because if it means selling the utility outright, that requires a certificate transfer. And if it does not, then it would mean It's a change in the commission's oversight of an exempt utilities management function. So that's the first question, and I don't know if you can, you know, answer or would be willing to answer for my benefit and for the benefit of the public what is meant by privatized in this context.
Sure. I think it would cover either. And, you know, in the first case where RCA already has some authority, it would just kind of outline exactly the review of the financials to make sure consumers are protected. And in the latter case where it's more of a, you know, a contracted out arrangement, you're just doing that same review for consumers. And again, Ledge Legal did not see legal issues with the amendment. So I guess there's just a disagreement among lawyers, which is not uncommon.
Well, so I mean, I read what Ledge Legal had to say, and their only specific comment was related to the constitutionality of the amendment. I don't disagree that on the whole, there are no constitutional issues. There is one potential constitutional issue with the provision in the amendment that relates to higher rates. And in the case, the first case that we discussed of an outright sale of a utility, the purchasing private entity that's receiving the certificate is constitutionally entitled to receive compensatory rates. And those rates may be higher than the rates that the municipality was charging. And although we have not seen the transfer of a municipal refuse utility, there have been historically a number of transfers of municipal utilities of other types. Probably the largest of those was the sale of municipal light power to Chugach Electric by the municipality of Anchorage. Probably the next biggest one was a sale of the water and sewer utilities in Fairbanks to a private entity that's been operating now for about 20 years. And there's been quite a number of other ones as well. And pretty much across the board, what has occurred is when the private entity gets the ownership of the utility, rates do go up because the rates that were being charged by the municipality are either obsolete or deliberately have been subsidized to keep rates low. And so they have to raise rates in order to be able to get a compensatory rate and be able to operate the utility on a financially sound footing. So that's where the constitutional issue comes in, is the requirement that the privatization proposal can't result in higher rates than it would have there would have been if the municipality had continued to operate. And again, that's something that I don't think Ledge Legal addressed, perhaps because they were not aware of in the short amount of time that they had, were not aware of the consequences of that. So in any event, that's where the actual constitutional issue lies, not in the overall concept. So I think at this point I would recommend that if you would consider it, that there are a number of things that could be done to make the amendment more clear, remove some of the ambiguities, so that the amendment, if it eventually becomes law, will be clearly implemented and as well as clearly enforceable, and does not run afoul of that constitutional issue that I mentioned.
Yeah. Mr. Gehring, I'm a little hesitant to hold up Senator Meyer's bill anymore. I don't think it's unclear, but what exactly would you recommend that we change about the amendment?
Well, first of all, there is no definition of privatized in AS 4205. So, I think the first place to start would be to put in to be sure that that term is defined so that it's clear that it does in fact cover both of the situations that we discussed earlier. The second thing is that subject to the provisions of this chapter is ambiguous because, as I mentioned, all the municipal refuse utilities currently are exempt from regulation, and so they are subject only to very, very narrow provisions of the chapter. And I believe that this would apply to those utilities, and it would be better to make that clear. There are a couple different formulations. There are statutes that apply. by their terms in 4205, notwithstanding an exemption from AS 4205 of either in whole or in part. But I would recommend that some of that language at least be considered for inclusion so that it's clear that this does in fact apply to an exempt municipal refuse utility. And I think the third thing would be to clarify that the prohibition or the goal even of avoiding higher rates is not intended to override normal rate making principles, which provide that a certificated private business has the ability to have approved rates that compensate them for their capital investment.
Yeah, and let me just,
those are, I think, the three things that I would recommend.
Okay, so let me just address the last one substantively. I think the RCA is entirely capable of looking at a municipal cost structure versus a private cost structure, proposed rates, and seeing which one is higher. And I think the RCA can back out any subsidies and do an apples-to-apples comparison. So do committee members want to amend this amendment further, working with the Department of Law, or just move on? I'm inclined to just move on, but happy to
take input. I have a couple questions.
Okay. Go ahead, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and through the chair to Mr. Gehring. Is it realistic, if this amendment were to pass, that the RCA would be able to actually have the power to utilize it, or what that kind of looks like from the RCA's perspective?
Through the chair, Representative Nelson, I think that actually is probably a more appropriate question for Chairman Pickett. From my perspective, certainly if ambiguities were removed, it would make it more possible for the commission to do. I think the one thing I would note is that exempt utilities do not pay regulatory cost charges, which are the mechanism that funds the RCA. And as a result, the RCA would be essentially without the resources to do the work as far as an exempt utility is concerned. That might require an appropriation of funds specifically for that purpose. But that would be a fiscal matter, and I think that's really a question better directed to Chairman Pickett.
Chairman Pickett, do you want to weigh in on that?
Connected.
Yes, can you hear me okay? I'm having a terrible connection problem this morning.
The sound is clear now.
Okay, very good. Thank you. I think it's going to depend on the nature and size of the municipal utility you're talking about. For larger ones, it would be possible to tease out what you're referring to as the imputed subsidies. For some of the smaller ones with the lack of proper accounting system, so on and so forth, it could be nearly impossible. So I think it's going to span the gamut depending on who is making application for this privatization.
Thanks, Chairman Pickett.
I would like to get in the queue. This is Representative Kaufman.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Representative Kaufman, and then we'll go back and Representative Nelson.
Just a question to the bill sponsor or to the amendment sponsor. My question is, is the intent to make it exceedingly difficult to privatize or in some cases impossible? Because considering what I've heard in the testimony against this multiple times, it just seems like that's the intent. Could you clarify?
No, the intent is just to run a model on which is likely to have a better cost impact on consumers and have that be available to, you know, local government officials, to consumers, as they decide whether or not to move forward. And, you know, I think Chairman Pickett's right in the sense that, you know, sometimes you're going to have perfectly clear information. Sometimes maybe you have a little bit of ambiguity, but it's better to have some information than no information when making a decision like that. And frankly, I don't think the modeling would take all that long. And the RCA does complex modeling all the time.
Hello?
Yes.
So in the presence of ambiguity, that would mean that they would not be able to proceed of any sense of ambiguity.
Well, I think that, Representative Kaufman, I think that they could advise essentially consumers and local policymakers on, you know, based on the information we have, here's our estimate of what rates would be under the two options in terms of governance. And, you know, it's normal, I think, in modeling like that to acknowledge what degree of uncertainty exists based on the underlying data.
Follow up?
Yes.
So then the intent is that if there is ambiguity, that they could still proceed.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the local policymakers will have a little more information, and they can, you know, make a judgment based on the information presented by RCA. And, you know, maybe they say, hey, we think that the privatization is the best way to go. But, you know, they'll have that information. Okay. Do any other committee members have a preference on?
Yes. Chair Fields, this is Ken McCarty, Representative McCarty.
Hey, Representative McCarty, go ahead.
Hi. So I want to get a confirmation. What I heard was that we already have in statute the things that this amendment is possibly wanting to attend to, and yet there's some, using the words ambiguity, of the amendment at the current. If we delay to get that ambiguity cleaned up, there may not be time to get the bill through this session. But if the pieces of ambiguity could be worked through next session, maybe the bill could be moved this session to resolve those issues of the intent of the bill. Any thought to that? If anybody wants to share a comment.
Sure. I think Representative McCarty, you know, what Mr. Gehring says is that the RCA does have some review under a sale. They, I think, don't currently have review under just a contracting out of services scenario. But in either case, the additional clarity around modeling cost impacts on consumers, in my opinion, has some value. And I'm inclined to do the amendment, move the bill, not hold up this bill any longer. If we need to do clarification later on, I'm happy to do that. But, yeah, we have 2 weeks left. I think Representative Nelson had a comment.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And through the chair, to Senator Myers, what's your opinion on Amendment Number 1? You know, you are the prime sponsor of this bill, so would like to take your input on this.
Through the chair, Representative Nelson, Robert Myers, Senator for District B, for the record, thank you for the question. The more discussions that I've had with the RCA and seeing the memo that came from Department of Law, the more concerned about this amendment that I am. The ambiguity portions are definitely part of it. Department of Law also pointed out that as it's currently stated, one portion of the amendment may be effectively unenforceable. There's some significant problems here. This is a significant policy change. We're talking about potentially effectively having the RCA start to regulate municipal utilities in some ways, which they don't currently. There's trying to figure out what defines a creating a higher rate. So, for example, the talk is whether or not a municipal utility is being subsidized by property taxes or whatever the tax base is for the municipality in question. So I would have to wonder if you're talking about lower rate, higher rates or lower rates, if that would include how we factor the subsidy in. Do we factor in the fact that you can maybe your utility rate went up, but now your property tax rate went down? Overall, does that result in a lower charge to the consumer? That's a possibility. In my mind, this is just enough of a significant policy change that I prefer to see it in a separate bill to be debated on its own merits rather than attaching it to what started out as a simple board extension.
Representative Sponholz, you prefer to clarify based on Mr. Gehring's input this amendment and maybe take it back up next week? I'm happy to do that.
I think I want to go slow to make sure that we're doing it right. I really appreciate Chair Fields, the intent of consumer protection. I think that it's really important that we make sure when we are considering privatization of utilities that we're considering the way that it's going to impact individual ratepayers. And, you know, sometimes we sort of see these false promises about lower rates and increased services that as a result of privatization, which don't pan out. And the RCA is sort of uniquely positioned to be able to do this kind of analysis. They do this work all the time. So they're experts in this kind of work. But I think that, you know, there's a few ambiguities that if we can sort of slow down and make sure that we're clarifying, you know, the definition of privatization. And I think the second of subject to provisions of this chapter element, then I would feel really comfortable advancing this. And I think it would be a really important part of consumer protection for Alaskans.
Sounds good. And Senator Myers, the intent here is definitely not to have the RCA just regulate municipal refuse utilities in the way that they regulate electric generating co-ops and companies. It's simply to have a consumer protection review at a time of proposed governance change that would result in privatization either in ownership or contracted services. So it's a pretty, it is a new policy, but it is limited in scope. So Mr. Gehring, we will work on that privatization definition, and feel free to take the amendment draft and send basically a red line, and we'll work with Ledge Legal and bring it back next week. So, and I apologize to Senator Myers that it's been delayed, but I think it's an important consumer protection, and we'll definitely get this bill passed. So this time, we're going to hold Senate Bill 190 and move on to House Bill 301. House Bill 301, this is the second hearing on this bill. We do have Dan Heckman with GVEA, Julie Espy with MEA, Carrie Ann Baker with HEA, and Brian Hickey with CEA online for questions. And at this time, let's take up amendments. Amendment number one is from Representative Shragi.
Thank you, Chair Field. I move amendment number one.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Amendment number one is pretty straightforward. It changes alternative to clean.
And I think this was a technical cleanup amendment where we missed an alternative in the draft as it came over from Energy. Is that right?
That's correct, Chair Fields.
Okay. Do committee members have questions for Representative Shragi? Representative Nelson.
So, to Representative Shragi, when you mean clean, what's the definition that you collect to go under?
Through the chair, you'll find definitions for clean under the definition section. So all the sources of energy generation that are listed therein.
Okay.
And Representative Nelson, Representative Tuck in the Energy Committee had an amendment that changed renewable to clean. Well, Representative Tuck actually wrote it as alternative. Then there's an amendment to it, the amendment to change it to clean, which I think committee members thought was a better term. And the straggling alternative was just a word that was missed in the cleanup of the bill. So clean does, under the amendment adopted by Representative Tuck, clean does include nuclear as well as your traditional energy generation. Are there further questions? I'm going to remove my objection. Is there further objection to Amendment 1? Seeing none, Amendment one, number 1 passes. Representative Shragi has Amendment number 2.
I move Amendment number 2.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
And let's see, Amendment number 2 looks like some further cleanup. Amendment number 2 deletes clean and inserts renewable in a couple of occurrences. And for further clarification, maybe we can invite my staff, Ryan Johnston, to the table to walk us through that.
Go ahead, Mr. Johnston.
Thank you, Chair Fields and Chair Sponholz. For the record, Ryan Johnston, staff to Representative Calvin Shragi. So with Amendment number 2, as Chair Fields was explaining before, Representative Tuck in the previous committee had an amendment changing to alternative, and then there was a conceptual back to clean. And that when that was done on the fly, it left clean in every area, but it has clean and clean energy in those places, so we don't need four cleans. So changing it back to renewable, and that also fits within that section of the bill does not fall within the new clean energy standards statute. That falls within the existing AEA statute. So AEA is still using their definitions of renewable and clean, so it makes the most sense to continue using renewable and clean for the Alaska Energy Authority.
Thank you. Does that make sense to everyone? Okay. Representative Nelson.
Chair Fields.
Oh, go ahead, Representative McCarty. And by the way, Chris Rose is online for questions, too, if anyone has questions for Chris Rose.
And it's poignant. I'm out at Valley Forge right now with you guys. So here's some major decisions happened here and major decisions happening with us. So the question I have is, by removing clean, does that also remove alternative ways of producing energy or securing the intent of making sure that we're not creating too much pollution type things?
Representative McCarty, no. It doesn't. And I can explain.
And so the question is, like, if we go renewable language only, what about the utility systems that are producing energy through
say, natural gas, and they're scrubbing, make sure that it doesn't pollute the environment.
Representative McCarty, so this amendment, again, is a technical cleanup amendment. There are underlying AEA statutes that address renewable energy, and that's all this amendment cleans up. Under the bill, the clean energy standard is inclusive of nuclear and what most of us would consider renewable, including hydro, wind, tidal, solar. Natural gas is not considered clean energy because of its greenhouse gas impact. So, again, this amendment is just a cleanup amendment, and the underlying bill is a clean energy standard inclusive of nuclear.
Okay, so I'll continue on discussion when we get to the bill itself. And so sounds like the amendment, just changing the language there, is fine.
Yeah.
And this is Rep. Kaufman. I'd like to get with you. Thanks.
Okay, and Representative Kaufman, we'll go to you next. I think Ryan Johnston wanted to comment. Ryan Johnston wanted to comment on Representative McCarty's question.
Ryan Johnston, for the record, just to clarify for Rep. McCarty, the current language in the bill right now, if you turn to page 8, line 28, it says identifying progress developing clean and clean energy resources. So for Rep. McCarty's edification, we're just simply replacing one of those cleans. So it will say clean and renewable, or renewable and clean. So both definition, or both words, are in there for Rep. McCarty.
Thank you.
Okay, then that leads to follow up.
Let's go to Representative Kaufman and then go back to you, Representative McCarty.
Thank you.
Rep. Kaufman, to the amendment sponsor, I think that we may need a conceptual, because where in that line 28, removing clean, there's an and. Am I correct?
I'm going to turn to Representative Ryan Johnston for that one.
Yeah, for the record, Ryan Johnston. Yes, Representative Kaufman, and we're simply just deleting the clean and replacing with renewable. So it's a developing clean or renewable and clean energy. So.
Okay, I got it. I read it the wrong way first, but thank you.
Okay, Representative Cardi.
Thank you. So, Ryan Johnston, you shared that the language is not to delete the piece of, let's say, a utility operation was using natural gas, and yet they had scrubbing ability to scrub the CO2 or any type of greenhouse effect type things, then we should give them credit for that.
Hey, Representative McCarty.
Say it's got to fit a certain thing. So is that acknowledging that ability too?
Representative McCarty, we're going to address that in the next amendment. Representative McCarty, we're going to address that in the next amendment. So this time I'm going to remove my objection to amendment number 2. Does anyone have further objection to amendment number 2? Thank you, Representative McCarty, for that transition to amendment number 3. Amendment number 3 is an idea that came out of some discussion introduced by Representative Kaufman in the Energy Committee. And basically in the Energy Committee, Representative Kaufman said, hey, we should have a process to potentially change what falls within the definition of clean energy resources. And I think one pending technological change that could very well play out is carbon capture and sequestration, whether from gas or from coal. And that was just referenced by Representative McCarty. So Representative McCarty, I would say, as technology evolves, as we could potentially have carbon capture and sequestration, as we could potentially have other zero carbon energy generation technology, the Alaska Energy Authority will, under this amendment, report back to the legislature. Under this amendment, we would have the authority to change the definition of clean energy resources, but we're telling the AEA, hey, advise us on it because y'all are the experts. So I appreciate the concept of this introduced by Representative Kaufman in the last committee, and I guess I need to move amendment number 1. Did I move amendment number 1?
3.
I'll move amendment number 1 at this time. Sorry, I should have done that first.
And I'll object for the purpose of discussion.
Okay. Are there further questions on amendment number 3?
Well, you just moved amendment number
1. Oh, sorry. I moved amendment number 3. Move amendment number 3. I apologize.
I'll object for
okay.
It to be objectionable.
Thanks, Representative Kaufman. And did committee members have any further questions on what this amendment does?
Brett McCarty.
Go ahead.
So thank you. I don't have the paperwork in front of me yet, the amendment, so it's great to see this in there. I think we need to recognize that technology evolves in many different realms, even in that of operations that are using natural gas. And also we have a classic example of this in Chena Hot Springs, where they're taking that and moving it over to the greenhouse, that's growing vegetables. And so here we are definitely wanting food security. So maybe those utility companies could help with that food security. It's part of the process, but definitely not to exclude. It's got to fit this certain box only. So thanks for the amendment of the maker of the amendment.
Okay. Representative Kaufman, do you have comments and do you maintain your objection?
I just want to say thanks for putting this amendment together based on that concept. I remove my objection.
Okay. Is there further objection to amendment number three? Not seeing any. Amendment number three is adopted, and thanks to Representative Kaufman for the idea. I'm going to move amendment number four.
And I'll object for the purposes of the explanation.
Thank you. This amendment moves up by 3 years the first deadline for the clean energy standard. And one of the reasons for that is we had some discussion and input from stakeholders around potential ramp down of Cook Inlet gas production. So that motivated me to think about ramping up renewable energy generation and to more quickly diversify our energy sources and provide consumers with protection and options. The other factor I was thinking about here in proposing to move 2030 to 2027 is that under the bill, the energy generation doesn't actually have to be installed and operating by the target date. There is a two-year time horizon that goes beyond the target date. So you could have a project approved in 2027 that's actually deployed in 2029. And given that, I thought it made more sense to move the date up to 2027. A lot of these projects deployed under this bill will actually be operational in 2029. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions about this amendment. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And through the chair, to you, have you talked to the AEA about this to see if this is a realistic goal? I mean, you're moving down 3 more years. I mean, that puts a lot of constraint on construction,
right,
and on what they're trying to do. So have you talked to them about this amendment?
Thanks, Representative Nelson. I didn't talk to AEA. I did talk. I have shared this with utilities. This was also based on a suggestion from some of our previous testifiers. The bill was introduced by the Dunleavy administration actually at 2025 as the first target. So another one of my thoughts is 2027 actually kind of met in the middle. And I know that talked to Julie Esty yesterday. Ms. Esty, do you want to talk about date ranges?
Thank you, Representative Fields. For the record, this is Julie Esty with Matanuska Electric Association. The utilities have been pretty consistent in wanting this first deadline to offer some additional flexibility from the initial governor's bill in recognition of just regular project timelines that could cause further delays. So we would prefer it to remain 2030 as was as it came out of House Energy. Again, really in recognition of project timelines, as we're working with renewable energy developers and trying to develop projects ourselves, things like permitting, things like land acquisition, things like interconnection, even things that we're running into with one of our current independent power producers around increased costs of solar panels and financing due to the global unrest. All of those items are considerations in the realities of making this happen, and so we would prefer for it to remain or go back to 2030.
Thanks, Ms. Esty, and I will turn.
Rep. Kaufman, like being the key.
Okay, Representative Kaufman, you're up after Representative Spanos.
Yeah, I've got a question for Chris Rose, who I believe is available for questions. So I'm looking at page four, subsection D, which describes sort of the compliance period, which says on starting on line 20, if the capacity will begin providing the clean electrical energy to load serving entity no later than 2 years after the beginning of the compliance period. And so I kind of read that, you know, in line with Representative Fields' comments, as meaning that if we amend the bill to have 2027 be the start date for the, you know, for the first goal, then we wouldn't actually have anything online by 2029. Is that your reading there? Do you have any concerns about this?
Through the chair, Representative Sponholz. That's the way I would read it. I do have concerns about moving it back to 2030. As Chairman Fields pointed out, the original bill said 2025, and it's important to keep in mind that the railway utilities currently are just about at 20%. So we are moving, we would be moving from 20% to 25% by 2027. The other thing that's been done to the bill since it was originally introduced was we've moved the 30% requirement down to 25%. So both the amount of electricity that has to be renewable by 2027 has already been reduced by 5%. As Chairman Fields pointed out, if we move it to 2027, we actually would only require that the projects be in service and delivering electricity by 2029, which is 7 years away. There are many small projects that the utilities could be undertaking right now that would move us toward that. And there are many, many potential, there's lots of waiver language in this bill that would allow the utilities to make a case to the regulatory commission if they felt that there was something that really prevented them from getting to the 25% by 2027. So we support the amendment to move it to 27%.
Uh-huh.
Excuse me, 2027.
Yes, go ahead, Representative Thomas.
Yeah, so could you talk a little bit about the waiver language and how you think that that provides utilities the flexibility they need?
Well, there are multiple elements to that waiver language that the utilities could bring to the commission to say, well, we tried to do this, but we couldn't do it for these reasons. Some of those reasons could be the reasons that Ms. Essie just brought up. They could, if there were some kind of problem with supply chains or transmission, those things can definitely be brought to the commission and say, well, we just couldn't do this because. The other thing that I think is important to remember is the new electric reliability organization, we hope, will be certificated by this fall and will be doing its first integrated resource plan sometime, you know, next year. It will begin that plan, and that plan is going to develop a lot of alternatives, alternative portfolios that will eventually be approved by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. And that is likely to be happening by 2025 timeframe. A lot of wind and solar projects can be built in 2 years or less. That's happening all around the country. And again, it wouldn't have to be actually built within 2 years. If the requirement was, let's go this direction in 2025, there'd actually be 4 years, 2 years to 2027, and then an additional 2 years under the provisions of the bill to get a built to get a project done. And we believe that we really do need to continue to put as much emphasis on moving this direction, particularly for reasons that were alluded to in terms of the availability of cooking like gas. So we think that this is an important amendment and would support it.
Representative Kaufman, sorry, are you?
No,
okay. Representative Kaufman is next in the queue.
Thank you. Through the chair, I find good merit in the arguments of potential difficulty. I think it's very likely that the supply chain issues that we're seeing now will only get worse. Inflation. There's not a good news story on the global front right now, and in many cases not in the U.S., with respect to the economy, inflation, stagnation. So I believe we have to, have to tread carefully. And I don't see anything wrong with the utilities kind of leading the target knowing that requirements are coming, but not being, you know, have to go through some of the processes that were just described. So I'll be objecting to the amendment, although I appreciate some of the arguments for it. Thank you.
Sounds good. Are there other questions on the amendment? Representative Nelson.
Yes, Rep. McCarty.
Let's go Nelson and then McCarty. Representative Nelson.
I will yield my time to Representative McCarty.
Go ahead, Representative McCarty.
Yes, through the chair, I concur with Representative Stockman. Just flying down to Pennsylvania and looking at the port of Seattle and seeing the diminished numbers of cargo containers there in the port and knowing the slow flow of supplies that exists, and then hearing that China is reducing the flow that's coming out, as it was announced yesterday, that I think that the goal is admirable, but we could have a failure because the timeline is too quick. And so I concur with keeping it to the 2030. We still have the goal. We're not diminishing that, but let's make it to a point that is fitting our supply chain. And I think we've heard that from the testimony from Giulietti as well.
I just want to point out.
Kaufman. I would like to get back in the queue. Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead, Representative Kaufman.
Speaking of Julie, I would like to hear you know, her thoughts on this subject. If we could hear from Giulietti.
Thank you, through the chair, to Representative Kaufman. Again, for the record, this is Julie Espy with Matanuska Electric Association. Just to correct the record, by our current calculations, the rail belt's around 15.3% renewable, so this would still be a jump of 10%, which is significant. Again, based on just the standard utility world is a long lead time, high capital intensive industry, and there aren't just realities for the length of time to develop a project. And so I definitely hear Mr. Rose's point that we could then go to the RCA and tell them all the reasons that we can't meet this goal, but we would prefer to set goals that are achievable and that we can gain success and move on. I think one of the In order to establish this big policy, I think one of the worst things that could happen was to set it up for the utilities not to make that first goal. And so having the ability to set it to 2030 gives us a longer line of sight and really just takes in those realities. Again, just even with permitting, as we look to interconnection, transmission needs, all of those items, those take substantial time. We're going through a process right now with a transmission line within MEA service territory. We've been at it a couple of years. We're looking at potential legal challenges. And so there's just significant realities. And again, I know that there are provisions in the bill to allow us to go to the RCA and let them know why we couldn't make it. But that's not the preference of the utilities. The utilities' preference is for us to set goals that are attainable. Also, in looking at the timeline, currently the bill has the RCA's ability to draft regulations, which is the rules of the road that we follow as utilities. So they have 2 years after the passage of the bill. So even if it did pass in 2022 this year, the regulations wouldn't even be out until 2024. Also, with the integrated resource plan, we're looking at, you know, even a year from now at the best before we have all the pieces in place to even start the integrated resource planning, and then another potentially year or two after that. So as we're looking at these timelines, we just want to be realistic and we want them to be achievable. These aren't, what you're hearing is not the voice of the utility trying to push back and saying we don't want them. What you're hearing is us saying this just isn't realistic. So happy to answer other questions as they come up.
Okay. Honestly, I'm tired of the utilities moving the goalposts. I didn't hear any concerns from Julie Estee yesterday when I told her about this deadline. Previously, I heard support for the utilities for compromising. This is a compromise. 2027, 25% is a compromise. If the utilities are going to move the goalposts, it's going to discourage me from listening. I just want to point out this is way slower than almost any other set of utilities in the country have moved on renewable energy. It is, frankly, very slow. If we keep it at 2030, it's 10 years. 10 years before we are requiring a single kilowatt hour from renewable energy from flowing into the grid. That is, I think, indefensible. The governor put out a fairly aggressive target. We compromised, and you know, I'm frustrated at what I see as maybe less than straightforward input from the utilities when I've tried to work in good faith to advance saying that it is a compromise. So this time, we've got another member who needs to go to another committee in 45 minutes, so we need to get through these amendments. So will the secretary call the roll on amendment number 4?
No.
Representative McCarty?
No.
Representative Sharkey?
Yes.
Representative Snyder?
Yes.
Representative Nelson?
No.
Co-Chair Fields?
Yes.
Co-Chair Sponholm?
Yes.
4 yeas, 3 nays.
With a vote of 4 yeas and 3 nays, amendment number 4 passes. This time we're going to take a brief at ease. I'm going to move amendment number 5.
No object for the purposes of explanation.
Thank you. This amendment is introduced based on conversation in the Energy Committee about clarity around renewable energy credits. Again, the original bill as introduced by the administration had no renewable energy credits. Renewable energy credits provide utilities with additional flexibility in terms of meeting the goal because a rural community off the rail belt could build renewable energy generation where maybe the net savings to consumers is greater and sell renewable energy credits to rail belt utilities. In discussion in the Energy Committee, it was not clear when projects had to be online to qualify for these renewable energy credits. We also heard concern from utilities about basically requiring relitigation of the Bradley Lake Agreement. So in the interest of not relitigating the Bradley Lake Agreement and tariff issues, this amendment clarifies that renewable energy credits under this bill would be for generation built on or after July 1, 2022. Again, this is additional flexibility for utilities. I think it gives rural Alaska a stake in the success of this bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and through the chair, both to you. So what you're looking at right now is just any company that would be available for the credits would only be if they have developed energy either from July 1st onward, correct?
Yes, this is for projects going forward. So, you know, it would be pointless to write a renewable portfolio standard where we just count all the existing hydro in Southeast and say, we did it. Well, this is if communities in Southeast or Western Alaska want to build additional renewable capacity, count that toward the RPS goal for the rail belt under this bill. That's a good thing. I think it's a win-win, and this amendment just clarifies this new generation.
Okay. Are we able to talk to some of the energy producers and see what kind of projects they have online, you know, in the near future to see if this is a credit that they're able to utilize almost immediately or?
Sure. I think Chris Rose would be the best person to answer that question. There are a number of projects listed in the AEA portfolio, and they are funded, and I'll just start to answer, they're funded under the Renewable Energy Fund, what's called a waterfall. So it's the prioritized projects. And Mr. Rose, if you want to provide more detail on some of the potential near-term projects in rural Alaska that could qualify for renewable energy credits under this amendment.
Thank you, through the chair, Chris Rose, Executive Director of Renewable Energy Alaska Project. Chair Fields, I don't have the list of the projects that the Renewable Energy Fund Advisory Committee just approved a couple of weeks ago, but there was $14.9 million for the projects that were approved. Some of those were construction projects, many of those were feasibility or reconnaissance studies, but there have been more than $600 million worth of projects that have moved forward since the Renewable Energy Fund was developed back in 2008. about 85 construction projects that have been developed through that fund to both state appropriations and matching funds from federal and local entities. So I think it's very, very clear that we're going to continue to see more renewable energy in rural Alaska developed. There are many, many communities that are working on projects right now because not only has the technology continued to evolve, but of course we have very, very high electric rates in rural Alaska, but probably going to be much higher now with oil prices. So there's an incredible incentive for those communities to reduce their dependence on imported diesel for generation. So we believe that there's going to be continued movement on renewable energy across rural Alaska. I cannot speak to future potential increases in hydroelectric generation in Southeast Alaska, but that's also a possibility.
Go ahead, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And through the chair, would this amendment follow on for a project that is halfway built or not yet producing electricity for a rural community that they don't have the supplies to get it out there yet for a couple of years, or, you know, they either abandon the project, or what does this kind of look like for a credit?
Go ahead, go ahead, Mr. Roos.
I don't have the language in front of me, but I think that's a really important point, Representative Nelson. It could be clarified that projects that were under construction as of July 2022 could be eligible, because it is possible that some projects are currently underway.
Yeah, and Representative Nelson, my intent was new projects, so not one that's 98% with completion and they turn the light switch on.
Just wanted to make sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there additional questions on Amendment Number 5? Is the objection?
Question to the
yes,
Representative Hoffman here. You just stated your intent. Do you feel that this language is clear on that?
I think it is. I don't think we have fledged legal on the line for this bill. So.
Billy's worked together on one of them.
Yeah, you know what we can do, Representative Coffin? Happy to check with Ledge Legal. If it's not sufficiently clear, we can clean up with a floor amendment. Given the timeline, I think we probably need to keep moving.
I'm okay with it.
Okay. Who objected to this amendment?
I removed my objection.
Okay. Is there further objection to Amendment 5? Seeing none, Amendment Number 5 passes. I will move Amendment Number 6.
And I'll object for the purposes of explanation.
Thanks. This is a suggestion from utilities that fines under this bill will be able to be collected from ratepayers because most utilities are co-ops, so there is no other source of money. In addition, this amendment cleans up the fine structure. So rather than having the fine flow through the utility, then to the RCA, and back to the utility, the fines would be changed to what's called a penalty here, and this amendment would clarify that any penalties under the bill, and ideally there are none, but any penalties would be collected by the utility and reinvested in clean energy generation to help meet the intent of the bill. This amendment does not change the amount of the fine. Committee members will notice that there is a lower fiscal note, an updated fiscal note from the RCA. I think part of that is in recognition of this amendment, where we're not going to have RCA collecting money. I think it doesn't make sense to have RCA collect money. I also think that if there are any fines implemented in this bill, probably consumers are going to be curious, why am I being fined? What is the fine going toward? And I think as a consumer, I would want to see that, hey, if Chugach Electric, which is my co-op, if Chugach Electric was fined for not meeting a penalty, then they're reinvesting my dollars as a consumer in renewable energy generation. It's not sort of a fine for the sake of a fine. It's a fine or a penalty for the sake of meeting the goals in this bill. Do committee members have questions? Representative Nelson.
Through the chair, to the chair for the last section of this, on that specific note, I mean, it might be great that you want to make sure that a penalty imposed onto an electric company is reinvested into renewable. Would you be open to the idea of having it rebated back to the customer originally? I mean, you might want to have it reinvested in renewable. I might just want to have that extra money back. What's your thoughts on that?
I think if we did that, there would be no meaningful penalty for utilities failing to meet the requirements in the bill.
In fact, it might actually incentivize it.
Yeah. Unless we want to have, you know, unless we want to have personal penalties for the board members or the executives within the company, and I don't really want to go there. I think I'd rather have a fair structure of having reasonable confidence we'll meet the goals in the bill that don't personally penalize people who work for the utilities.
All right, I've removed my...
Okay. Is there further objection to amendment number 6? Seeing none, amendment number 6 is adopted. I will move amendment number 7.
And I'll object for purposes of explanation.
Amendment number 7 actually accompanies amendment number 5. One of the requests from utilities is that we have a consistent tariff up and down the rail belt for dispatch of renewable energy, but that we structure it in a way, again, that doesn't relitigate the Bradley Lake agreement. What is the virtue of a flat tariff up and down the rail belt? If there's renewable energy generation that's deployed in, say, Seward or Homer, that energy should be able to be dispatched up to CEA or MEA or GVEA without pancaking tariffs that disincentivize the production and dispatch of such energy. It just in terms of the structure of the drafting, it took 2 amendments to do that, number 5 and number 7. Do committee members have questions on number 7?
I'll remove my objection.
Is there further objection to amendment number 7? Not seeing any. Amendment number 7 is adopted. And at this time, we're going to take a brief at ease. on the record in House Labor and Commerce. So, having completed work on amendments on House Bill 301, we will hold that bill and return to it Monday, hopefully to take final action. I don't think there's any further business before the committee, so at 10:23, we're adjourned.